Hey, everybody. Once again, if you're listening to this, you're hearing it on the free feed. So go sign up at the Patreon. That's a better place. You'll be able to get this full episode. I had to truncate this episode because we didn't do a bonus episode. Not fair to the paying members who, you know, got this episode a few weeks back. If you want this episode in full, and if you want all the episodes live, go sign up at the Patreon at subbeacon.com. You'll easily find it. We're talking about the Beanie Bubble this week, which is very exciting because we all get to talk about our favorite commercial bubbles. So a lot of chromium covers and 1980s baseball cards coming up in this episode, I think. Anyway, should be fun. Go check it out, subbeacon.com.
Hi there, big dogs. I'm trying to get home.
I know which way that is.
Oh, great.
Right up my ass, you little...
Oh, no, that can't be right.
This is Will Ferrell.
I'm lost.
You're a stray man. You can do anything you want.
This beer doesn't taste good, but I like how it's making me feel.
This is Jamie Foxx.
I recently... this couch.
Best sex of my life.
And she dirty, too.
Oh, well, I can tell. Looks like she hasn't been washed in years.
I'll see you later, baby.
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Warren. With me, as always, are my two co-hosts, who can do anything they want, Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. You can find us at subbeacon.com, where you can get first access to every episode of the show every Friday, plus exclusive access to bonus episodes on Monday, when Sonny remembers to post them on Monday. Just saying that. Comment, chat with your fellow members of the Subbeacon community. And every once in a while, one of us pops into the comments there. So it's a lot of fun. Become a patron at subbeacon.com today. We are going to be talking about Strays, which I believe, Sonny, you described as the R-rated Homeward Bound of our generation in your review. We're going to be talking about that movie a little later in the show. But first, before we get into it, how's everybody doing? All right, well, that's all good and well. Why don't we talk a little bit about, well, the box office real quick. So let's look at this last weekend here. Number one at the box office here in the doldrums of summer, Blue Beetle, raking in $25 million. That's not good, is it?
Raking might be a little strong.
Yeah. No, that's
scraping
bad.
Across the line. That's bad. Okay, that's what I thought.
It's worse than Shazam. It's worse than the Shazam sequel.
It's worse than Shazam. It's worse than Morbius. Morbius did better. Opened better. Here's the one thing I will say. I get the feeling that Blue Beetle might hold a little better than Morbius or Shazam: Fury of the Gods, because it has gotten the people who like it seem to really like it, It got okay reviews, and there's not really a ton of other big stuff coming.
Does it play as a family movie?
I think you can take kids for whom it is appropriate to see like an MCU movie. Like that age, whatever age you're taking kids there is, I would say. I mean, It's aimed at Hispanic families, basically. It over-indexed compared to the population of Hispanics, but it was clearly very underwhelming in the turnout because you put like a new Conjuring movie or something like that in theaters, and it probably does double the box office. Over indexes in a similar sort of way because Hispanic audiences are very into religiously tinged horror for whatever reason.
Right. Question about this though. Yeah. When you say it is aimed at Hispanic families, like my impression from the trailers is that it's very like heavy on kind of winking references to, you know, like almost like stereotypical, you know, people, you know the Hispanic family, like it's got kind of a
what are you trying to say, Mike?
No, I'm saying like the jokes are all sort of like what am I trying to say? It seemed like every sort of reference is very much on the nose.
Yeah.
Comes to these things, like,
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I know. It's got like the, you know, it's got George Lopez in it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. George Lopez playing the Tia, right?
George Lopez playing a humorous older Mexican man.
Right.
One of the dangers of marketing in Hollywood, right, is you think like, oh, Hispanic audiences are monolithic in a way similar to how like Black audiences are or Asian audiences are. And that's not really true at all. Hispanic audiences are a bunch of Mexican, Cuban, South
Puerto
American,
Rican, right?
Like Puerto
Hispanics
Rican.
Hispanics who live in Colorado, Hispanics who live in New York. I mean, it's like all
it's much different. It's much different. And a little harder to, I think. My point being, it's funny. I was talking to a friend online about this. He was like, yeah, my Cuban immigrant father was like, I don't want to go see the Mexican superhero movie. And like, the real issue here is that, like, again, something like The Conjuring plays differently because it's specifically a more religious sort of thing. I mean, it's like a Catholic horror movie. Right. Or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what faith they are.
My point is it very much feels like it's leaning so heavily into, hey, this is a Hispanic superhero movie, instead of just trying to make an appealing superhero movie where the main character happens to be Latino.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see how it plays. I don't know.
Yeah.
I honestly,
but it only
know.
Made $4 million more than Barbie in its fifth.
It's gonna do worse than Barbie this week.
Yeah.
I bet Barbie is ahead of it. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe the movie only falls 33% because, again, there's only the only other real competition is Gran Turismo. Nobody's expecting that movie to do particularly well, even though it's pretty good. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I think it might hang around for a while.
Okay.
I got a Gran Turismo question for you guys.
Yeah.
I was in my AMC to see Strays, and I happened upon I'm trying to pull it up to show you. What do you call the big displays?
Like a standee?
A standee. There was
or
a stand-up. Standee.
Stand-up something like that.
For Gran Turismo.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And the stand-up for Gran Turismo was about 8 feet tall. I'm going to hold this over to you guys.
Whoa. Nope.
You missed. You.
Yeah.
You're showing us all your dick pics.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Keep those in the text chat.
So this is 8 feet tall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Covered in text.
The review, what? The Owen Gleiberman review. 1,500
words
no.
of text.
So here's...
As if anybody would stand there to read this fucking thing.
Well, you almost it's so audacious. You might actually do it. You might actually stand there and read it because you can't believe they actually.
So
did
this is fascinating. People on Twitter were making fun of this, and you see this sort of thing occasionally, but you see it with
it's
like
8 feet tall.
Right, right. You see this sort of thing occasionally, but you see it with like art house movies usually.
Yeah.
Usually it's like, okay, come see Moonrise Kingdom, and here's like the 600 word review from, I don't know, the New York Times or whatever. Like that happens sometimes. It happens. It's very funny that it's happening for this movie because, again, Gran Turismo is not the sort of movie where you're like, well, it's not a video game movie. And this is what I talk about this in my review,
right?
But it's a sports movie, really, is what it is.
Sure.
It's a sports movie. It's
based
not
on a video game,
right?
Sports movie.
But it's not that. So like the whole structure of it is basically Rudy. I mean, it really is like it's a sports movie through and through. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. But that advertisement is very funny. And I think the real point of putting the whole review up there is like, you see it and you're so impressed that they put the whole review up for this movie, Gran Turismo. You don't even need to read the review. You don't even need to read the 1500 word review.
I will say this. The part of me which is most like actually viscerally offended by this is, so this thing is 8 feet tall, so it's 4 feet across. All right. I want you to imagine 4 feet across.
Yep.
And the text goes clear across the 4 feet. People who do text arrangements understand that there is a number of words on a single line that the human eye is comfortable reading. And when you start exceeding that, the human eye gets really fucking angry at your brain.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're gonna tell me that we have to get rid of some of the beautiful words from Owen Gleiberman's review?
And this is like 35 words on average per line. It's
just
insane.
Bring in the margins. Like, just bring in the margins. Just
bring in the margins. Why would you go? I'm looking at this thing again. This is a 4-foot-wide thing. The text is incredibly tiny, and the margins are about 2 inches on each side. As if anybody could read it. Anybody who
it looks like the contract in Willy Wonka.
Yes, it's
my theory here. My argument would be the whole point is they don't want anyone to read it. They don't actually want anyone to read this. They're just trying to impress people by saying like, look at this review. We put the whole thing here. That's how good this is.
Right. It's like, yeah. Pass. It's like the nutrition facts or the ingredient list.
Pass. How did Strays do this weekend?
So that's what I was going to bring up next. Strays, the movie that we all saw and are going to be discussing in a moment, came in at number 5 behind Blue Beetle, Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem, bringing in just over $8 million in its first week. Strays, number 5. I mean, I guess I can't say I'm surprised. I don't. It's an R-rated, raunchy comedy.
There was a moment earlier in the summer where this was tracking in the 20s. So
for opening?
I'm really surprised. I thought this thing had all the hallmarks of an instant classic.
It's the sort of thing that I think is pretty easy to advertise, pretty easy to market. It's high concept comedy. You know, it's not hard to explain. It's cursing dogs. Cursing dogs are funny. And nobody showed up for it. Nobody came out. And I'm a little surprised, but I'm not shocked because I'd been watching the tracking numbers dip down again for the last month or so.
Is this hurt by not having James Fox and Will Ferrell to run out onto shows? And
yeah, I think there's a case to be made that certainly hurt, you know, at the margins and probably a little beyond the margins, because this is the sort of movie where you have to have the people out there making you laugh on podcasts and on late night shows, because that reminds you like, oh yeah, these are funny people. I like to see funny people do funny things.
You need them out there doing the schmay.
They need the schmay. You got to do the schmay.
So I read that Will Ferrell and Jamie Foxx actually recorded their lines together together in person for this movie. So like the chemistry between them on a talk show would be fantastic, right? Like it would be, although, sell the movie.
I don't know that Jamie Foxx is in any shape to do.
Well, that's a good point. I forgot about that.
Because he had like a stroke or something and like has not been seen in public for the last 6 months or longer. I think the strike hurt. And I do think that this is the sort of thing where you get like Rob Riggle out there, you know, doing 27 podcasts, and you get Will Forte out there doing, you know, Conan or whatever. And that would help, but audiences just weren't interested. Audiences haven't been interested in any R-rated comedies this year. I mean, the Jennifer Lawrence movie, No Hard Feelings, didn't bomb, but it didn't, you know, it's probably not going to make its money back, after marketing and everything.
All this is funny to me because you had a guy on Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. I forget his name, the Amazon Studios guy, who was laying out his blueprint for how to start a new studio. And he was like, we need R-rated comedies.
Right. Price. That's, yeah. His
I would build a new studio around R-rated comedies.
I mean, look, here's the thing. You make an R-rated comedy for $5 million and all of these are fine because they actually make more money on VOD at this point than they in theaters. You keep more of your VOD money. The problem is when you get a movie like No Hard Feelings or Strays, those both cost between $45 and $50 million, I think. If you spread that out a little bit, look at something like The Blackening or Joyride. Those were cheaper movies in like the 10 to 15 million range, I think. But Bottoms. Both of those bombed as well. Bottoms is coming out. That movie is going to bomb. You know why that movie is going to bomb is because it is a gay comedy, a gay rom-com, and people do not show up for those. Just look at Bros.
This is a lesbian rom-com. That's same. Different.
I think it's probably about the same. The problem is, again, like, audiences are simply not coming to R-rated comedies. They are, but they are doing okay business on VOD. My understanding is the Fletch Lives movie did pretty well on VOD. It didn't really get anything other than a token run. Confess Fletch. Confess Fletch. That did pretty well on VOD. I bet this actually will do okay on VOD. No Hard Feelings supposedly did pretty well on VOD. I actually bought it on VOD, watched it on VOD.
The R-rated comedies do feel like the kind of thing you pop on when you've put the kids down and you're just looking to like laugh at something stupid. And like, it feels like a movie that you're comfortable watching in your basement and not going out right to
Could
the movies.
Strays find an audience on streaming? Because again, I feel like this has all the makings of a cult classic.
Well, I feel like lots of these movies become hits once they get to DVD, right? Well, I mean, like not all of them, but yeah, I mean, movies like Office Space, right? Or Idiocracy, or I don't know, some other Mike Judge movie. Old School was a pretty big hit.
Old School was a big hit.
Yeah. I mean, it's really wild to think about the decline of the R-rated comedy. I mean, like 12, 13 years ago, The Hangover comes out. That movie made $500 million worldwide. Yeah. The whole Frat Pack run with the Wedding Crashers and Old School,
40-Year-Old Virgin,
all the Judd Apatow movies, right? The 40-Year-Old Virgin
has the quality gone down? I mean, are comedy tastes changing?
I think
because the last one I remember, and I could be wrong in the timing on this, the last one I remember going to a theater to that was kind of a big hit was Bridesmaids. And that was what, 10 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. You had several movies in that run with what's her name?
Melissa McCarthy. Yes.
She had several. The Heat was very big. I don't know. I think part of it is you have changing audience tastes. Part of it is there is a hesitance to make movies about certain subjects.
Yes.
Audiences these days are very uncomfortable about sex in movies, especially sex in theaters. Younger audiences in particular, not that interested in the raunch-com sort of thing, which is, you know, a combination of like changing mores, also the most interesting theory that I have heard to explain this is kids today have developed such a strict and rigid set of codes when it comes to nude selfies, and the like ideas of nudity has to be totally strictly consensual, that everybody has to agree to everything before you start doing it.
Vic isn't here for this.
They don't want to show up in theaters and just get surprised by it. And like it's fascinating.
It's like, consent to this.
I've literally read this argument before. Nudity is a violation of my consent. Nudity in a movie is a violation of my. I did not consent to this. I was not given proper. And like, first off, there's a whole fucking rating system,
right?
That tells you, you know, what is going to be in the movie. But I digress. I don't know. Audiences aren't showing up is the long and the short of it. And I don't know if it's just if they get their humor on TikTok now, if the older audiences like us just stay at home watching on demand or whatever. I don't know.
Well,
Strays.
Why don't we talk about Strays? Let's hear a big boy review of Strays.
Strays. It's dogs talking and cursing. They're having fun. They're living their best life. All right. So the setup of this movie is pretty simple. Will Ferrell plays a scrappy little pup named Reggie, who is unloved by his owner, Doug, played by Will Forte. Will Forte keeps driving him away from the house and leaving him places, and the dog keeps coming back. And eventually, Will Forte drives him into the city, leaves him there. Reggie can't get back, and he's scared, and he's alone. And he meets up with Bug, who's voiced by Jamie Foxx, and they and a couple other dogs decide that Doug is a bad owner and that Reggie needs to take his revenge by getting back to the house and biting Doug's dick off. That's the whole movie right there. That's the movie in a nutshell. The humor will, I found the movie pretty funny, even though I had seen the trailer so many times that I knew 80% of the jokes before they were coming, which is annoying, as always, but like, I still found it very funny. There is a, for instance, there's a, this one moment where a celebrity cameo, I won't spoil it for anyone here, but is doing some bird watching, and you think at first the joke is just this celebrity is doing bird watching, and then the camera cuts to his notebook, which is just the word bird over and over again with like little empty checkboxes next to it. And I was like, and that made me laugh because it was unexpected. I thought it was very funny.
By the way, one little grace note in that joke is he has one empty checkbox left to check off the bird he just saw. And then he very clearly checks on the opposite page in his book where the, where everything else was filled in already. Like everything about that, like just made me burst out laughing. Sorry. Go ahead.
I enjoyed that. And there are a lot of little visual jokes like that that are very funny. The setup here is basically dogs cursing and humping things and talking about how they're humping things. It's dogs and they're weird and they're strange, but we're always trying to think about how dogs act. And this is how they actually think. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I'm a dog guy. You guys are not dog guys. So I'm kind of curious to know. You hate dogs. Both of you hate dogs.
No, no.
Both of you probably sympathized with Will Forte in this movie.
JVL.
This brings me to my final point. Again, there's not a whole lot to review here. You either find it funny or you don't. I thought Will Forte's performance in this movie was not only very good, but also very brave, because he has to be essentially the most evil person in the history of cinema. The sort of person who you believe will beat a small dog to death with a baseball bat
because
he's tired and
no acting.
And he simultaneously has to be so pathetic that you think that he absolutely deserves to be castrated for his patheticness. I don't know. I like this movie a lot. I thought it was very good. Let me walk that back a little bit. I thought it was good enough. It made me laugh enough times,
sure,
which is like between 4 and 6 times. And I was like, all right, this is fine. Fun time in the theater. If I could have gotten the Men in Black device and neuralized the ads out of my brain so I could have seen them all fresh, it probably would have been a little better. I don't know about you guys, but the preview for Strays played in front of essentially every movie I saw at the Draft House for the last 2 months. So I've seen that trailer like 20 times. It's very annoying. But anyway.
JVL. What did you think of Strays?
I don't like dog. I don't like talking animal movies. And this is a whole genre. The weirdness that there is a genre for talking animal movies is just fucking strange. But I thought this was consistently funnier than it needed to be. And, you know, maybe because it's a Lord and Miller production and they exercise some control over the screenplay. Again, like this could have been a very mid-level production, and instead it's fine. I mean, an example is the cameo with the bird watcher. Another example is they're at a carnival, and the carnival scene just absolutely broke me. It was so funny. And it starts where we are all of a sudden out of the person of the dogs, and we are sort of third person watching a girl doing a carnival game, and you know, a young 25-year-oldish girl doing a carnival game, and a 25-ish guy watching her, and he's got a dog, and the dog barks while she's trying to toss the ring or something, and then it's a meet cute, you know, and they're having their little moment, and then we cut back to dog POV, and the dogs that we're, you know, our protagonists are talking to this dog, which is a lab, a golden lab. And the golden lab is like in his own world telling a story, and they're making fun of him for like narrating when nobody's listening. It's like a funny bit. Sure. And then they leave. And in a lesser movie, that's the end of the bit, and we're on to the next joke. And here, the dog says, "They're right, nobody is listening to me. But they should, because I know that he's a serial killer, and he already has 3 girls' bodies buried in our backyard."
Yeah,
that's so fucking dark. And then the next one, hold on, Sonny, you're muted. The next one is, so they're there and they have stolen hot dogs, and fireworks start, and we get the craziness of like dogs being afraid of fireworks, which again, in a lesser movie, that's the joke. But here, the joke is that Hunter, who is voiced by I forget who, who's like the neurotic therapy dog.
Randall Park.
God saw us. He sees everything. He thinks the fireworks are God smiting them for stealing. It just, the whole movie is filled with things like that, where they go two and three steps further into jokes than they need to. And that's why I just think this is destined to be a classic. No, Michael? Thoughts?
No, I totally agree with you. It felt, I was comparing it the whole time to Cocaine Bear, and Cocaine Bear felt like, you know, what does Perd Hapley on Parks and Recreation say? Like, it had the cadence of a joke, like it had the cadence of a funny movie, but it didn't actually deliver on the humor. Whereas Strays went above and beyond, as you say, like it seemed to have been written and directed and made by people who actually like comedy, who actually understand jokes and what's humorous. And it sounds ridiculous to say that. Of course, they're making a comedy movie. Why? But like, there's a lot of funny movies that are, you know, movies that try to be funny that just aren't. Yep. And this felt more professional. I laughed out loud several times in my theater at the Alamo Draft House. I was the only one. I feel like if I had been in a full theater, I think it would have been even more enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish that I had been. There was like only a handful of people in our theater.
Yes.
It's only showing twice in a day at my AMC.
Oh, really? Really?
We're on week two, and it's getting two show times per day.
Oof.
That's not good.
That's tough.
Go ahead, Sonny.
JBL, you said you saw it with your mother-in-law.
My mother. Right? So I took Flash and my mother-in-law. And my mother-in-law is in a place right now where she could use a laugh. She's going through some tough stuff. And she is, I think I may have heard her curse once, like 20 years ago. But she's
a saint.
She's very saint. And she's not like, you know, the church leader or anything. But she's just very, you know, but she likes body stuff. So she'll like titter over body things. And so I took her and I just said, hey, Flash and I are going to go see a movie tonight. Come out with us. So she said, okay. And then she says, what are you going to see? I was like, it's like Homeward Bound, but I got to see it for the show. It's stupid. And I'm making Flash see it as a, you know, as a penance, because I want some company. And so she's like, so it's just like talking. I was like, yeah, it's like dogs talking, trying to find their way home or something. She's like, okay. And we sat down. The first 30 seconds, she looks at me. She goes, oh.
She was all a titter, is what you're saying.
And here's my lone criticism of the movie. And I don't quite know how to express this properly. I think there might have been 15% too much cursing.
Yes.
Not because I have any problem with it, but I think it may have muffled some of the jokes when the cursing really hits as right. I mean, there cursing done for comic effect is a very real thing. And the more sort of non-comic, just sort of background cursing that you have, it takes a little bit of edge off of those moments when it really does hit, to have a dog like yelling, no, go fuck yourself or something like that.
Right, right.
Did either of you feel that way about the, like, just a little bit too much of it?
I did feel that way. I also felt that the jokes that I liked the most were actually some of the tame ones, the cute ones that were sort of like, you know, set up your expectations and then were revealed to be kind of a funny, cute dog joke. Like, so
the bunnies,
the bunnies, which I saw cut, like I knew immediately.
Yeah. What was going on. Yeah.
The one I was thinking of, which that was, so that was very, that was a very much a comedy professional type joke. The one that I really liked, which I liked probably too much, but I just thought I was wondering about it the whole time. So there's a whole, the whole premise is they're trying to get back to home. So he's dropped off in Atlanta. It's very obviously, I mean, it's filmed in Atlanta. And then they have to get back to the country where this small town. And there's three kind of waypoints on the way back that Will Ferrell's dog remembers. And the last, and you see two of them on the way up to Atlanta. So you know what they're talking about. The third one, they keep referring to the devil in the sky. And I, like, literally, it was a tease for me. I was like, what was that? I don't remember seeing that. And, you know, spoiler, I guess, it was like, it's revealed that the devil in the sky is a giant, you know, postal service billboard, with smiling postmen on it. And I just, it just was not what I was expecting at all. It was, I just thought it was very funny. It tickled me. And then it actually did have the great payoff at the end of the movie.
Yes.
When the postman actually shows up and they do say, you know, fuck you. You know, they're like, they're barking at the postman and he's like, oh, look at you cute dogs. Like
I got, a lot of energy.
Right. Exactly. And meanwhile, they're screaming and they're, you know, fuck you. Fuck you.
Bite off your head.
Right, I want to bite off your hand. So I thought actually when the movie leaned into the cute stuff, it was working really well. And it made those shocking moments, ring true. And so there were times where I thought, yeah, a little too much shock. You know, leave us wanting more. So
my only critique on the jokes was I expected and thought we deserved to see the Doug get a visit from the serial killer at the fair.
Well, did you say that would have been singer? Very funny?
Was there a stinger?
Is there a stinger?
There's a stinger where you're in the hospital and the doctor talking to Doug about everything. It's like, oh, and we couldn't reattach your dick.
I did see that. I did see that.
The boxes, right? So Doug is moving and we have shots of his house and he's got boxes everywhere which are labeled. It's like Doug's porn, weed
stuff,
wrappers, like weed stuff. I don't know, like little stuff like that.
It's very visually funny. It's very visually. This is also a hallmark of the Lord and Miller Spider-Man animated movies. There are lots of background jokes.
Talking to the dogs when they can't understand each other. I loved it.
Yeah, so did I. And I thought
Flash was going to piss himself. He was laughing so hard.
Yeah,
I would say if you are 15, boy, this movie is the funniest thing ever.
Would you say this movie is funnier, less funny, or the same amount of funny as Good Boys, JBL?
Same amount for me, less. Again, my own experiences with Good Boys are very personal because I feel like I lived Good Boys, and so for me, Good Boys hits as an emotional movie in a weird way. But in terms of funny, I would say they're both very funny, equally funny. You?
I would say it's slightly less funny for me. I like Good Boys a little more than this. But I liked it a lot. I give it a thumbs up. You know, I'm surprised I haven't gotten more hate mail about giving Barbie a thumbs down and this a thumbs up on the old Rotten Tomato scale. But, you know, this was better. I just thought it worked better as a comedy.
So I did not share. Can we just say, have a quick word about Will Forte? Because I did not share your insight, Sonny, that you know he had to be the worst person. Like it was all played very, very light, even though like it was like terrible like dog abuse he was doing. Like I never actually hated Will Forte. Like I thought he was great. And I just think Will Forte is a completely underrated comedy voice.
Thank you.
I think he is speaking of podcasts, I did listen to his interview, which was done before the strike, recorded before the strike, with Dana Carvey and David Spade, in which they go through a number of his Saturday Night Live sketch. And he is one of these guys that is way funnier than anybody thinks and is sort of the victim of some overshadowing. So one of his all-time greatest sketches on Saturday Night Live was a bit that he used to do in the Groundlings, Will Forte did. It's essentially he's in a spelling bee and he spells a very basic word incorrectly, but he drags out the very obviously incorrect spelling for like 3 minutes of like spelling letters that don't make a word. And, it's a hilarious bit and it's his commitment, right, to the like ridiculousness and like unfunniness that makes it funny again. And it's a very funny sketch. It had the unfortunate fate of airing the same night as Lazy Sunday. And like Lazy Sunday is what everybody remembers from that period. But I want to, you know, light a candle or whatever for Will Forte's.
It's funny to me. So Lorne Michaels has a long history of bringing in guys basically to push out other people and bring in people who have duplicative talents. And, you know, like Bill Murray was in a way duplicative of Chevy Chase, and he's done this for, you know, 40 years or whatever. Will Forte was brought in basically the very end of Will Ferrell's run to do Will Ferrell bits. And it is funny to have the two of them interacting in a movie in a way in which you could easily see each of them taking the opposite role. Very easy to see Will Ferrell doing the part of Doug, and very easy to see Will Forte in the part of Reggie.
Yeah, you could do, you could definitely see. I always thought Will Forte was brought in to get rid of Chris Parnell, who Lorne Michaels always kind of hated.
No, Chris Parnell's more of a utility player. Chris Parnell is one of these guys who you just put in into any number of different roles that don't need a lot of
star power.
So what I have heard is that is a little bit of that, but also that Lorne Michaels likes to have funny people around him and different types of funny people, and sort of like almost kind of like has this sense of he always wants this troop with different strengths. And I would say, yes, Will Forte's could have fit into that role, but he's actually so much weirder and darker than Will Ferrell. And I think that's why he never really broke out, because the commitment is different than Will Ferrell's commitment is like bigger and broader. And Will Forte's commitment is to things that are weirder and like basically like fucked up. And I think it's amazing that he was on the show for as long as he was and given the chance. And he seems to have the same view. Like he can't believe his own luck. So,
yeah. All right.
Anyway. Well, that's all the time, I guess, we're going to give to Strays. Any other thoughts? No?
No.
All right. You can check us out at subbeacon.com, and we will see you next time.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. So we're going to do talking animal movies bonus.
I'm sorry. I think we may not be able to.
Yeah,
I
can't do it.
I've got to jump as soon as we can wrap here. So, maybe next week we'll do a bonus or something. I don't know. We'll do something good and fun for you guys next week.
Do something good and fun. Yeah.
It's been a long week.
We're going to make excuses for ourselves here. But you know, we'll get it back together next week.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.